Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Underway for Oregon. Mario Cristobal practice is closed, but Mario Cristobal addressing the media. Julian Mininson, KEZI TV, and Eugene, man of the world, friend of the show, joining us. What was the mood around spring football and Mario Cristobal, Julian? How's he doing?
Oh, man. You know Mario, the football junkie. He is absolutely excited, and I think the big reason for that is because they're actually getting that full spring weightlifting program, fourth quarter program that they got cut short last year. So, a lot of the players that were new get that full off-season experience of Oregon football, which I think, as you know, Mario, builds a lot of the team building and chemistry through that off-season stuff. All the foundation starts in the spring. And so you could tell he's juiced to bring the juice for practice.
Big question about the quarterback position. Did he talk at all about Ty Thompson or anything going on at quarterback?
Yes, he talked about the quarterback position. He said Ty Thompson, the five-star from Arizona, looks the part, which is good to hear, because of a lot of hype coming in, and that's obviously the big question with Tyler Shuck going over to Texas Tech. I mean, you got Anthony Brown there who's going to come back. He's the veteran guy, but he talked highly a lot of all the young quarterbacks, whether it was Ty Thompson or Jay Butterfield or Robbie Ashford, who's the baseball-football combo. But as far as Thompson goes, it seems like early on, according to Mario, that he's as good as advertised.
The rest of this team feels pretty solid. Like, it feels like Oregon is about to take another step forward. Julian, as you look at this program, where do you see the questions for Mario Cristobal, or what is he trying to figure out in the spring?
I think it's the leadership thing. The Rose Bowl year, and even the couple years prior where they won the Red Box Bowl and stuff, you knew that Justin Herbert on the offensive side and Troy Dye on the defensive side were your leaders. When the chips were down, those were the guys that some of the younger players or inexperienced players looked to in some of those adverse situations. But now, last year, I think there was kind of an identity crisis, and you didn't really know who was going to step up as that leader. You know, in the off season, you had multiple guys at different position groups say, I'm going to be a leader this year, I'm going to lead by example, or I'm going to be the vocal guy. But you never really saw it come into fruition out there at times during the season. I think that this spring is going to be huge for that, because now you get time to have, you know, the team building, like I mentioned, the chemistry building, guest speakers hop in. You have a lot of young players, like a Noah Sewell, for example, who have already dipped their toes in the water and got to experience what college football looked like and got a sample. And now you get a full off season with some of those younger returners. I think that's the big thing, is deciding who is going to be the leaders of this team, frankly.
Julian Mininson, KEZI TV, and Eugene joining us. It's easy to say that Mario Cristobal wants to run the ball and play defense, and maybe the quarterback position isn't that important, but we've seen in college football, you need a good quarterback to win big. How important is it that they find somebody in the spring versus fall camp, or can they afford to go into the season with this still a question?
No, you really can, and I think we saw the issue with that last year when we all knew kind of coming in, like Tyler Shuck was being touted as the guy, like Tyler Shuck is the guy. But then when the results really didn't speak for themselves, they were kind of in figuring it out as you go mode at the end of the year, where you can't really do that, especially against bigger, better opponents. You know, the Pac-12 championship game against USC, I was surprised to see Anthony Brown out there. I didn't expect that. And then you didn't know what they were going to do in the Fiesta Bowl, and it kind of bit them in the rear end when it came to that. So I think that is one of the big questions that's going to need to be figured out this spring is, okay, we have our guy game one, and we're going to ride that wave moving forward. I think the spring will certainly help with that.
Julian, it's, you know, the defense last year, we watched Noah Sewell at the end of the year. He's just developing. He's going to be, you know, an NFL player one day like his brother Panay. But how healthy is he? Did Mario Cristobal talk about the health overall of this team in the spring?
Yes, he talked about it. He said pretty much mostly everybody is a full go. The good news is there's a lot of players that were injured last year, like a Spencer Webb or C.J. Verdell, even, who had a hand issue. Those guys are, as of now, either working their way back or pretty much full go. There were a few players, Samson New, who's medically retired, Chris Randazzo, who's medically retired, but nothing huge or anything alarming to any of the key returners from last season, which is good because you don't want to have those question marks as you're trying to, you know, develop what you want to develop in this spring. The only one that I would say that could potentially be a little bit of an issue down the line is Sean Dollars. Mario talked about him suffering a leg injury and that he'll be out for most of the summer. He's the running back, the California kid. But other than that, really, it seems like the Ducks are as healthy as Mario would like them to be during this time.
It's difficult to not think about Ohio State. And in week two of next season in the fall, they go to Columbus. Somebody's going to have to be at quarterback. What is your sense right now as you look at, you know, Ty Thompson, Jay Butterfield, Anthony Brown Jr.? Who would you instill as the odds-on favorite to be the starter in week one?
As of right now, I would say Anthony Brown, at least only because of the experience factor. And he's familiar with the system. He knows what they want. He came here from Boston College not expecting to sit. He came here to win a spot. That doesn't necessarily mean Ty Thompson won't get the keys to the castle later down the line. I think, though, for a game against Ohio State, putting a five-star true freshman in there, unless he is like a Trevor Lawrence type where he is that good right away, I'm expecting maybe Anthony Brown. But then again, you know, crazier things have happened. So I don't know. I guess time will tell. We'll see.
Yeah, I would hate to put a young player in week two at Columbus. And I think Mario Cristobal probably wants to run the ball and play defense and probably wants to go with somebody a little more experienced. Julian Menonson, KEZI, is with us. Julian, you were there in Indianapolis. You saw the Ducks. You saw the Beavers. Let's start with the Ducks. They're going to lose Tony Stubblefield. He is going from being an assistant at Oregon to being the head coach at DePaul. Is that a big blow to Oregon and Dana Altman? How do you view that?
I mean, it doesn't help. He's, you know, been a fixture with the program for a good minute now, and players like playing for him. But, you know, I do think when you have a guy as polarizing, I think, as Dana Altman is, and kids know and respect him automatically when he walks into a room or in these days hops on a Zoom call for a recruiting call or whatever. I think it's still going to hold a lot of weight. I think the Oregon brand holds a lot of weight. I think them winning another Pac-12 regular season title here this last year holds a lot of weight. So I think Altman will get it figured out. Plus, the other assistants on the team are really great. Before COVID, you know, we'd be able to go on a media availability actually in person, and they'd be finishing up practice. And guys like Mike Menega, you know, really rallying the guys in practice and assistance that way. So it's never good when you lose somebody like Stubblefield, but I do think the Ducks will be okay.
What do you think of Oregon State's run? Is it sustainable? Is it something they could build on? If so, what do they need to do in the short term?
amazing. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't expect that to happen. I don't even think a lot of Beaver Nation expected them to get to an Elite Eight this year, especially after, you know, that abysmal start they had when they were 10-10 to start the year, and they had losses to really bad losses to Wyoming and Portland and Washington State in a non-conference game. Amazing run, and I think it is going to be huge to build off this because it'll help with recruiting. It'll help with overall support. When fans ultimately get back at Gill Coliseum, they're going to remember this run, and now it's going to be, okay, we're excited for Oregon State men's basketball now. So I think that's going to be huge. I think having guys like Warith Alatiche, Maurice Kalou, Rodrigo Della, guys who transferred into the program and they got to be on the national stage and show how much they developed from day one to that last day of the NCAA tournament for them, I think a lot of players are going to look at that and say, you know, I could be that too. I could improve my game the way Wayne Tingle improved their game. And I also think Wayne did a tremendous service for himself because I think he was one of the probably better coach interviews all tournament long. And people got to really see who he is as a person, who he is as a coach on the national stage. And with his family being there, the whole family aspect of Oregon State, I think it's all good. All good things came out of that tournament run, even though it wasn't a Final Four run, and it'll pay dividends for the Beavers down the line.
Who do you like in this Final Four? Gonzaga? You think it's Gonzaga's year?
Yeah. I mean, I stayed an extra day in Indy, John. I went the Wednesday after the Beavers lost. So I went and checked out the Gonzaga-USC game just to sit there and watch as a fan, because we rarely get those moments. And I have never seen a better college basketball team, at least in person. I wasn't a super believer, part of me, because I didn't want to go chalk and pick Gonzaga in my bracket all the way through. But I have a hard time believing that anyone in the country, whether it be the three other teams in the Final Four even, can beat Gonzaga. And I actually tracked down head coach Kelly Graves, Oregon women's basketball coach, because his son Will plays on the team. And he was telling me in the stands, we were talking, he was telling me that they, according to his son, these guys have been so dialed in and focused. And when you have a team that basically, you know, they're big, they're long, they can shoot, they can run, and they have the focus, and they have a really good coach in Mark Few, I have a hard time anybody is going to beat them. I do think it's going to be Gonzaga-Baylor, but I think it's the Zags year, man.
Julian Minnison, KEZI. Hey, I appreciate you, my friend. Thanks for joining us and sharing your expertise.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Love that he stuck around to check out Gonzaga-USC in person. I got to be honest, I left the Oregon-USC game feeling like USC's athleticism and length could give Gonzaga a test. I said, don't be surprised if USC plays close. And about 5 minutes into their game with Gonzaga, I was like, never mind. Gonzaga feels like it is locked in a way that would be a big upset if it lost here. Obviously, a 13-point favorite is the largest margin since 1995, and they started tracking such things. Largest point spread in a Final Four, 13 points. Gonzaga favored. I want you to leave it here. Coming up, our Culligan Water Cooler Report. Beautiful sunny day. This is one of those days where I look around and I go, this is why you live here. You know why. Roy Williams is retired. That's some news. It's baseball's opening day. The Rangers are allowing fans into their ballpark. President Joe Biden's calling it a mistake. Rangers are going full opening day, full capacity on April 5th. At least that's the plan as of now. It is the subject of the Culligan Water Cooler Report. We do it every day on the show.
Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
I want to kick this around a little bit. You know, opening season, opening day, Texas Rangers are going with a full capacity crowd. Their game against the Blue Jays, April 5th is the date. Texas governor announced that he's lifting the state's mask mandate. He's allowing businesses to remove any restrictions on capacity. That was effective March 2nd. The Rangers are taking advantage of this, at least for the first game. The remaining games at their ballpark in April and May will have distance seating. So that is a result of COVID-19 directives, of course. Vaccinations are rising across the country. Some are wondering whether it's appropriate to stage a large public event. Others are saying, hey, if it's within the limits or the rules in the state of Oregon, you know, that's not on the Rangers. That's on, or excuse me, on the state of Texas. That's not on the Rangers. That's on the state of Texas. Rangers employees are not happy. They're not taking it rolling over, stadium staffer told ESPN. The governor said they could do it. Should they do it? That's the question. I'll take your phone calls at 503-417-7575. Zach, I'm going to start with you. Put you on the hot seat. Rangers are doing it because the governor is saying, look, you can do it. Should they be doing it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you're going to get some backlash from some people who, you know, are worried and they want to be safe and they're thinking about themselves as well as their families and what the repercussions of this could be. At the same time, you know, in the United States of America, you know, states individually have the power to make these decisions, and the Rangers are deciding to go within the regulations of their state and do this, and we'll end up, we'll see what happens. But you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, if you're worried about it, if you're scared and you're a fan, obviously don't go to the game. Stay at home, watch the game from home in the safety of your own home. If you want to get out there in the ballpark and experience it, and you're willing to, you know, take that risk, whatever you assess that risk to be, you know, by all means, go ahead. I do understand, though, I guess the employees of the Texas Rangers and their concern, because, you know, they work for the franchise and they're in the building and all of this, and this directly affects them, and they don't necessarily have a choice like a fan does. So I more empathize with those employees of the Texas Rangers.
I'm concerned about the inconsistency in baseball, because you have the Rangers who are wanting to go a full opening day, shoulder to shoulder, mask off, normal experience. And then you have the Mets today that postponed their game with the Nationals because they said, look, we got a player who had a positive test, and we contact tracing, we'd be down to five players. So out of a quote-unquote abundance of caution, we're not going to play this game tonight. So I'm looking at that, and I'm going, okay, the Mets are being super conservative. Baseball's being really conservative. But then the Rangers are, it's almost like it's another country. The Rangers are going to go and say, well, you know what, the governor's allowing us to do it. I do think that, like, there's some logic to that. Like, if it's legal in the state of Texas, I'm not really putting that on the Rangers. I'm looking at the governor and going, okay, wait a minute. Did you think this through? That said, Roger Goodell, NFL commissioner, is saying he expects full stadiums in the fall, that the NFL games will happen with full stadiums. So I don't think that this is going to be an outlier. I think that you're going to see sports entities, especially outdoor venues, who go, look, We have everybody supposedly vaccinated by May 1st. Everybody who wants the vaccine is going to have it. We got to get back to business. Peter Sampson, where do you stand?
Yeah, I mean, look, they're allowed to do it, and yet they're only doing it for one day, and then they're going to reduce capacity, if I'm understanding this right. Yep. That just goes to show they know they shouldn't do it. Otherwise, it would be just full speed ahead. I get the eagerness. I mean, I wish I was at a packed ballpark right now, but you know what? We're at, what, 18% vaccinated? That number needs to get a little higher. I know we're going to have full stadiums, or at least I feel very comfortable that's going to happen this summer, but we're not quite there yet. And just based on how they're staggering this out, they know they shouldn't be doing it.
Are you guys vaccinated? Are you getting vaccinated soon?
Hopefully soon. It sounds like eligibility is just starting to come available, at least for me. And I'm out there as soon as I can.
Yeah, Zach, you got your shots yet?
I'm not.
It's interesting to me because I'm not vaccinated, and I was in the arena in Baker's Life Fieldhouse. And I have to be honest, I was looking around. I felt pretty safe in the arena. I had distance between me and the other media members. Everybody had their masks on. There was never a point where I was like, oh, this isn't a good idea. That said, I did find a lot of people as I interacted with people who offered to me that they were vaccinated upon encountering me. Like, I thought that was a new thing. Like, I hadn't been out in the world very much. And so I had friends who worked at other papers who would approach me and they say, I'm vaccinated, as they approached. And I thought, gosh, is that going to be the new norm? Like, are we going to have a summer spent with people walking up going, hey, are you vaccinated? I'm vaccinated. Like, and what is going on in that setting? But I noticed like a lot of employers are saying, hey, if you feel sick, if you have any hint of being sick, you stay home, whether you're vaccinated or not. I also know that, you know, one of the at least one of the vaccines, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, is a one shot vaccine versus the two shots, and that the efficacy of it is like 66% effective that you won't get COVID. But it's like 100% effective that COVID doesn't hospitalize you or kill you. Like, where do you guys stand on that? If you have a choice of vaccines, and one of them is, look, 66% chance that you won't get it, but also, you know, in the trial, they had nobody who had the vaccine ended up hospitalized or dying.
To me, that's the most important thing. I mean, you know, if we could miraculously get 100% efficacy, no one's going to get it. That's ideal. But at this point, we got to get the deaths down, got to get the severe, you know, reactions down to COVID, the hospitalization. So I'll take whatever they offer me.
I was looking at also the there's a difference. You know, some of the other vaccines had higher rates of, you know, non-transmission, but they also were tested before all the variants were out there. So it's hard to say head to head which vaccine is better, but the health authorities, by the way, are saying any vaccine is good as long as everyone's vaccinated. That's what they're saying. So they're saying, don't compare them head to head. Well, how do I not do that? How do I not do that if at some point I'm going to have a choice of, you know, don't look at the two cars. Don't look at the three cars. Just pick one. You know, it's essentially them saying, make it.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.